The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 527. I hope all is well with you out there, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. My guest for this episode hasn't been on in quite a very long time, but I'm very happy to have him for this episode. And the man that I'm talking about is Mr. Matthew Calvert, the man behind Calvert Comics. Now, we talk about a lot of things on this episode, take two. You're going to hear Matthew and I talk about his latest project, Uckboy number 2, which has actually transcended comic books. In fact, this project has definitely taken a different turn, so to speak. And you'll hear all about that as Matthew and I will talk about that. As well as we'll also talk about a couple of his other past projects, such as Frivolous Glamour. We'll also talk about some of his inspiration for his art and his philosophy on art, as well. So it's a really deep, heavy, philosophical episode that I think you're going to enjoy. But before we get to that conversation, I need to thank a couple great sponsors. First off, the newest sponsor of the PVD Cast, Courtney 614 Deals. If you need great deals on women's fashion, health and beauty, and a myriad of other products, then look no further than Courtney 614 Deals. You can find her on all those major reselling sites like Whatnot, eBay, Poshmark, etc. Simply look for Courtney 614 Deals, and you will be able to pick up some great... And you will be able to pick up some great bargains. And actually, if you do buy anything from Courtney 614 Deals, let her know that you heard about her endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. And now it's time for the old school sponsor. That, of course, being World's Greatest Comics. World's Greatest Comics is your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues, comic book supplies, everything you need for your fandom. So you should stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. But if you can't make it out in person, you can follow them on the web. First of all, their website is wgcomics.com. And they're pretty active on their Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. And I'd like to thank both Courtney and Jeff and all the fine folks at World's Greatest Comics for their support throughout the years of the PVD Cast. It means a lot to me, and I truly do appreciate it. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Matthew Calvert of Calvert Comics. Ladies and gentlemen, this afternoon, I'm sitting down with the man behind Calvert Comics, Mr. Matthew Calvert himself. How are you?
Excellent. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Can't complain. You know, it's been a very long time since you have joined me here on the PVD Cast, but every time that this happens, I think that it's like, oh, that just happened like a couple of years ago. So-and-so was on the show. And then we find out that Father Time is a cruel, cruel master, and I find out it's like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, but glad to have you back on, man.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, let's talk about maybe your newest project. All right. We'll get into talking a little bit about Uckboy number one. So can you tell the listeners at home what that project's all about?
Well, Uckboy is a series. It's planned to be three parts. That first one is sort of an experimental zine. It's half truth and half fiction. It's two parallel narratives. One line is autobiographical, and the next line's fictional, and they alternate.
Why did you decide to do one that was like based in reality and then one that's fictional?
Well, because I've written fiction my entire life, and I'm undergoing some sort of, uncharitably, I would call it a midlife crisis, but more charitably, a friend of mine has told me that I'm undergoing a Jungian process of individuation.
Okay.
You know, for the layman, I'm undergoing a midlife crisis. And it's occurred to me that I have never done anything autobiographical in my life. And I just decided it was time.
So can I just, I'm going to follow up here real quick. Are you, for lack of a better term, were you scared to do something autobiographical? Or you just never got around to doing it?
Said I wasn't afraid necessarily. It's more as though I was under the impression I was too boring.
Okay. All right. Okay. So you said that there's a three parts to Uckboy. Because Uckboy number one is out, correct?
It is.
So do you have number two already set in the works, so to speak?
Number two is a tapestry, which I will be exhibiting at a gallery show in Chicago as of next weekend.
Oh, wow. That's really cool, man.
Yeah, thank you. So that's the other thing about this. Well, this series has moved beyond comics, beyond zines, into something more fine arts based and more amorphous.
So how did that happen that you managed to get this museum showing or this art installation?
There was an open call for a certain type of work exploring identity in the body. I thought, well, that kind of works. You know, those parameters are all kind of vague and you kind of got to push the limits to work yourself in. I thought, I'll pay the entry fee and write the essay and submit it. We'll see if it sticks. And to my absolute shock, I was accepted.
And you said that is next weekend in Chicago?
The installation is next weekend. I think the following weekend is when it's open to the public.
Okay. Okay, cool. So obviously you're going to be heading out that way to see the installation.
Yeah, because my piece, Uckboy 2, is too large to ship economically. It's about okay. 3 feet by 4 feet, and it's a double-sided print. So
okay.
Luckily, a good friend of mine is a master carpenter. We're building a custom frame and easel for it to sit on in the middle of the room. It's going to be quite a to-do.
Holy cow. Jeezoid, man. That's badass.
Yeah, I'm pretty proud of it. It's kind of a landmark. As I said, it's midlife crisis. It's big changes across the board.
Well, let's go back to Uckboy number one real quick. How's the feedback been? Have you had a lot of people get in touch with you and say, man, this is something that's been really cool, really something that I've enjoyed, et cetera, et cetera?
Several people have loved it. In fact, it was a big moment for me. This time last year, I was in Lexington, Kentucky at a zine fair called Halftone Zine Fest. It's my favorite show every year. It's got a fantastic cross-section of people that come to it. And a few artists I really admire were tabling next to me, and they bought one and were over the moon with it.
So, yeah,
I found pretty touching. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, if somebody that's, you know, within the same space as you really appreciates it, that's the top notch right there.
Yeah.
All right. So you definitely got your plate full with this installation and Uckboy 2. But let's talk about a few other of your projects. One that I got to say, I think is again, pretty cool is you have a poetry comic called Frivolous Glamour. So what was the catalyst for this project?
Oh, I just finished this long-term thing, this long-term fictional series, and I needed something new. And that's always a sort of a panic moment for me. It's like, well, what's next? So I'd be up late at night. I've worked nights for a long, long time. So even on weekends, I'm up in the wee hours. I was just doing these little drawings, these little like 5x5 scratch board drawings, and they're all portraits. And I was taking a lot of inspiration from like silent film and old photography, doing these kind of weird black and white portraits. I thought, oh, these are just kind of goofy, and I mean, they're not going to lead to anything. They're just almost like drawing exercises. But I really enjoyed doing them, so I kept doing them. I do usually one or two a week. And I went on vacation, and I bought this book about sumo wrestling.
Okay.
I've always been interested in sumo because it's such an odd sport. So I started drawing sumo wrestlers. I don't know, maybe I can integrate the portraits with the sumo wrestlers. I thought, well, that's kind of really just bizarre, and that's kind of has no legs either. That's almost worse than just the portraits because that's just laughably odd. So then I thought I'd run with that and thought, well, what can I add to sumo wrestlers? So I added ballerinas. So I've established two like opposite poles. So you got ballerinas on one hand and sumo wrestlers on the other, and theoretically every other body type in the world in between.
Okay.
But I thought, well, that as a concept is kind of silly. So what do those two kinds of people have in common? So, well, theoretically, they're both artists, they're both athletes, because, sumo wrestlers are athletes in the abstract, but I don't know how athletic they actually are.
Well, I would say that they have they got to be strong. So I mean, to push the other
Certainly.
person from the ring, and I think the stereotype might be that you get some ignorant people that would say, well, ballerinas aren't athletes. The hell they aren't.
Right.
I've watched Black Swan. I see a little bit of what those young women go through to be the tippy top of the world of ballerinas.
It's a lot of pain and a lot of discipline and a lot of physicality.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you mixed all these together, and then I guess my question is, where did the poetry aspect come into Frivolous Glamour?
I didn't have a story, and integrating words and images are always my thing. I think that's really the bedrock of my art. So I was like, well, I don't have a story for this. I mean, what story could you concoct? Like, I tried a couple of things, but they all just felt like boilerplate. It's like I've got these drawings and I'm trying to shove a square peg in a round hole with a fictional story. So let's just get vague with it and do something like, I can't say William Blake because William Blake would be more specific than I was being. I thought, well, let's talk about image and beauty and, looks. Because that's what the project was all about, is stuff that just looks cool. That's the perfection of the title.
Well, how is with Frivolous Glamour? Again, I'll ask much like I asked before with Uckboy, how was the feedback for that particular project?
That was also a turning point for me. That was after about 8 or 9 years of attending the Small Press Alternative Comics Expo, I tied for third place for the space prize in general category, I'm proud to say.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, that's one of my questions, that you seem to be one of the regulars at Space each and every year.
Yeah, I love it. It's like a family reunion.
It is. What did you think about this year's? Because it a new venue, I think a new date, because I think usually it's in April, but it was at the end of March. What did you think overall of the experience of Space this year?
It was tremendous. Perhaps the best ever.
I agree. I agree with you on that one. I think that of the years that I've gone as just a fan, or sometimes doing podcasting there, yeah, I think that this one was really, really fantastic. And looking forward to next year there. All right,
Yeah, it's
let's talk
difficult to
about.
find good venues.
Oh yeah, it's absolutely difficult. And because if it's a great venue, then they want huge money. You know what I mean? Or and if it's not the maybe the best venue, then you have hassles of, making sure you have everything that you need there in order to put on the show. So yeah, I think it's fantastic. So All right, well, let's talk about another one of your projects, Perspicax, which, if I'm not mistaken, it's kind of based on the topic of paranormal experiences, correct?
I was trying to write a book like a dictionary, like a sort of like personal manifesto of our perception of the world.
Okay.
Which was way over my head, like still is sort of unrealized in the way that I'd like it to be. I never got it to where I wanted it exactly. Maybe someday.
Well, if I can ask a question about the structure of the book, because from what I understand, you had kind of like subtopics or stories, if you will. Like, for an example, one of the senses of the state. I'm just a little confused. Was that supposed to be individual stories, or is it more along the lines of like themes?
Yeah, probably themes is the best way to put it. Yeah, there's kind of like subcategories. It's kind of what I was going for. Like a broad topic cut into bite-sized pieces.
Okay, gotcha. All right, yeah, absolutely. All right, I can see that now as I was looking at my notes, you know, because you have some things about the fallibility of our senses, the scientific method, and stuff like that. I can see now. I see where that would definitely be thematic.
Yeah, I'd still love to get that exactly where I want it to be. I said, maybe that's the next one. Maybe the end of Uckboy 3 is a revisiting of the topics of Perspicax. That'd be cool.
Now, I know from, you know, seeing a lot of your work that you like to dabble in a variety of different styles for your projects. So when you sit down to start a project, is there any real forethought into the style that you're going to use? Or is it more or less along the lines of, let's try some things and see what happens? Or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both, but it always has to be semi-improvised.
Okay.
Because when I was the CCAD, I was an illustration major. And the methodology they taught me was that everything goes from a thumbnail to a rough sketch to a finished line drawing to a study of lights and darks to a final color piece, and then you work on the final. There was like extensive, rigorous pre-gaming that went into any project. And I struggled all 4 years of school because that's way too structured for me. That's what I finally figured out, is I can't do anything that rigid. So now, as a grown-up that does whatever I want, everything has to be sort of flying by the seat of your pants, because that to me is the fundamental fun of art. As you sit down in front of your blank canvas with the general idea of what it's going to be, but you're not 100% in control of the final product, and that's kind of the adventure.
All right. So I guess my next question would be, you obviously have this philosophy that art should be chaotic, maybe dangerous, controversial, whatever. So where did that mindset come from?
Yeah.
Did I stump you with that one?
Well, not necessarily. That's just, that involves a complex answer.
Okay.
Because I think that's sort of fundamentally my personality.
Okay.
That's part of my approach to art, is it should be real in a way that's not, maybe real is just a fundamental statement. I explained to some friends recently, since we last spoke, I've had a career change. I am now a truck driver, and in my new career, I've befriended a broad selection of characters.
Okay.
And we have long involved conversations on Bluetooth headsets, driving trucks in the middle of the night. This is another project I'd like to do, a sort of quasi-memoir of conversations I've had with wild truckers.
And I bet there's some wild stories too.
Endless wild story, just endless. That's why I said it would make a fabulous book. That's why I said it's probably the next project. I've even got a title for it: Sick Transit. That's half of the Latin phrase "Sic Transit Gloria Mundi," which means "So goes the world."
Okay.
So yeah, it's. But cycling back to the actual point, I'm sometimes asked to describe fine art stuff to the guys. I heard myself saying once, well, you know, that's the difference between art and entertainment. Because entertainment is obligated to be fun. art's not obligated to be anything but real. Oh, wow. I feel that deeply. I just learned something about myself by saying that.
So what were their response to that? Do you remember what maybe some of them said? Because that's really philosophical.
There were some snickers, but there were also sort of,
Okay.
I think, was the best response I got. Because, I mean, they don't have any skin in that game. That's all sort of academic to them. But through these conversations, it's like we've all become each other's therapists.
Mm-hmm.
And as you talk, you reveal yourself to yourself.
Okay.
That's been part of the value of it for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'd like to back up just for a few moments. I'm by no means am I being disrespectful to other people who do art by the rules. I'm not trying to state that the only way to do art is the way that Matt does it or whatnot. But I think it's an integral part of a conversation about how you got from point A to point B on a project. So I just want to throw that out there real quick.
Well, and everybody has their own set of rules that they have to transgress time to time.
So let's stick with your time at CCAD. How did you make that transition from that program into making comics?
Broadly, comics inspired me to get into art when I was a kid because I've been into drawing my entire life, but comics were drawing plus narrative, like drawing given a purpose. So okay. I always sort of tiptoed around drawing comics as a goal or never really realistically a career because I never thought that highly of myself that I could actually make that happen professionally. But I knew in a fine arts like my art sense that my self-expression would probably come through illustrated stories.
So you mentioned that you loved comics. What were some of your favorite comics?
Oh, my favorite comics. The first comic I ever owned was probably part of Daryl Banks' Green Lantern run.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Which was amazing when I come to find out that he and I are from the same hometown.
That was going to be my next question, if you knew that. So, but yeah,
I still never met him. One of my great goals in life is to meet him and be a weirdo and be like, you changed my life.
Oh, man. Yeah, that run was really, really good. And I think that it was, I think it hit at the right time. I just got to be honest. I feel like that storyline that Daryl was on just hit at the right time and it was fantastic. Do you have any others?
I'm a big fan of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing.
Okay.
From like a writing point of view, that's probably my favorite run of anything. It's like the Alan Moore, Todleben, Bissett era of Swamp Thing. It's like my favorite band, my favorite, creative team on any one comic. And then of course, as a college kid, I got into more alternative stuff. I'm a religious Crumb fan, a religious Mobius fan. Those are kind of the twin pillars of my concepts of like pen and ink drawing. I aspire to be somewhere in between the two of them. Like I said, it's kind of like ballerinas and sumo wrestlers.
Mm-hmm.
You have two polar opposites, and then you create a spectrum somewhere between the two. I don't think Crumb and Mobius are opposites really necessarily, but I try to be somewhere in between the two visually as far as draftsmanship and sort of like the tactility of their line work. Everything they draw is dimensional. Everything they draw has weight. So what constitutes a good drawing for me is something dimensional, sort of carved out of marble on the page.
Have you ever come up with a concept, an idea, and you start working on it, and then you're just like, I can't make this work. I have to throw in the towel. Or have you ever gotten to that point and then just went to 180 degrees and still kept working on the project, but decided to go from a different angle on it? Like, I guess my question here is like, how do you handle that rejection, if you will, so to speak, of working on a project that just isn't clicking?
That's when I used to be really rigid and have really specific goals with everything. I said, I think that's part of my training is, well, when you start a project, you should have very specific objectives and be working towards those objectives. But as I've aged, it's all become more abstract to me to where I don't stress too much about what it is in the moment. If I'm working on something and it's not as I expected it to be. I just have to sort of move my own goalposts.
Okay.
Because that was the story of Frivolous Glamour, is it wasn't supposed to be anything, and then it just took its own shape over time. Because I had no real specific goals after a while. But also, more to your point, Uckboy number one, I wanted it to be a certain thing. In fact, that was a real disappointment. Because initially, the graphite drawings that I based those on, I wanted to turn into screen prints. And I thought, well, this will be an experiment. I could break this up into different levels of gray and screen print gray ink and sort of create a fake graphite look. And I went to a printing company I've worked with locally, Upright Press, who are fabulous people to do fabulous work. And I approached them with this idea. And they said, sure, we can do that. And they made custom separations for me. It was a really involved, expensive process. And then I got them back, and I was sort of crestfallen. They weren't at all what I wanted them to be. I mean, they were perfectly what they were supposed to be, but it's not what I wanted. Like I said, I felt deflated when I saw them. I'm like, man, they look almost like elevated Xeroxes.
Okay.
I said, I'm not, you know, disparaging Upright at all. They did an excellent job. They always do. But it wasn't what I wanted it to be. It wasn't as true to the original as I wanted it to be. So after I had them, I'm like, well, I've got these. I'm deeply invested in them. I've got to do something to augment them and turn them into something else, to bring them home to a finish that I can be happy with. So I used those screen prints as backgrounds and did other prints on top of them.
Okay.
So that's probably an excellent example of taking something that isn't what you wanted it to be and sort of wrestling it into something that's a surprise to yourself as well.
Cool. All right.
I also went from being black and white to being color. All those gray quasi-graphite drawings became black and white backgrounds for color woodblock prints.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Matthew for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, toys, collectibles, hundreds upon hundreds of back issues. You name it, they got it for your fandom. So you should stop by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out online. WGComics.com is their web address, and they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for @ WG Comics. What inspires you?
Everything that's on the fringes of normalcy.
Okay. Can you give an example?
I think we talked, absolutely. I think we talked about this last time. I talked about the TV show. What was the name of that TV show? Tales from the Dark Side. You ever saw that?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen an episode or two.
Well, that was in reruns when I was a small child, in the phrase, everything that goes on in the dark is the same as when the lights are on.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's aspects of the world that are ubiquitous that people just ignore. That doesn't necessarily have to be any kind of like dark, spooky, horror tinged thing. It's just a lot of things in life go unnoticed. And I think the job of the artist in general is to pay close attention to things that other people ignore, either on purpose or through negligence.
Okay. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
I'm trying.
Yeah. No. I mean, it you think about, I guess maybe sometimes people would say I'm a people watcher. You know, if I'm, you know, like today, if I'm waiting for those that don't know off air, I told Matthew that I had a car issue that I had to get fixed this morning. But like while I'm sitting in that waiting room, yeah, I'm on my phone. But then at times I'm also watching other people and see how they react. And that's not a good thing or a bad thing. I just think that's just how I kind of am wired, I guess. So it makes perfect sense to me in that sometimes those obscure details you don't pick up on.
Right.
Well, let's go back to talk about conventions for a moment, because I know from doing my research and checking out some of your social media, you go to a lot of conventions. What makes for a great con experience if you're giving your opinion on things that must happen at a con or you must have at a con to make it successful? What are those things?
Mm. low barrier of entry, I find. Okay. I think the magic of conventions is the free shows that people just sort of wander into.
Okay.
That's part of the magic of a great venue. You have to have some place with foot traffic that people can just wander into. Because my most enjoyable interactions with people at shows are typically like people that have just wandered in, or the parents of a kid that wanted to come. And they're sort of befuddled by the entire thing. And you can kind of walk them through and say, well, welcome. Yeah, I know it's not what you expected it to be, but...
yeah. As we have, as we're starting to get close to time here, I have a couple more questions for you. Some that are a little more lighthearted, if you will, such as, if you had the option to have dinner with any famous person, alive or dead, who would it be and why?
I'd say Man Ray, my favorite artist of all time.
Okay.
And ultimately, sort of eccentric guy whose work isn't necessarily dark and deep, but was always inventive formally. And always push the boundaries of what materials could do.
Mm-hmm.
I was in New York last year on vacation, and the Met had a massive Man Ray retrospective, and I got to see things that I had never seen of his before, like all of his homemade chess sets that he made. Yeah, I idolize him because he's somebody that was more than anything just a free spirit that did whatever he wanted to do. And that was fundamentally what his art was about.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have any really like deep philosophical themes or anything particularly momentous. Like, for example, he made his own headstone, which says unconcerned, but not indifferent.
Wow. That's again, I hate to keep using the same word, but that's heavy, man. We'll go that way. But that I dig that because I don't think some people would get that. They wouldn't understand what those words mean.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have to ask because I am a hockey nerd. And for those that don't know, there used to be a guy that played for the Columbus Blue Jackets called Matt Calvert. How many times have you been mistaken for him?
A couple of times. People ask.
I knew. Okay.
It's a running joke also between me and my best friend, Adam. Anytime I get in trouble for something, he says, did you tell him that it wasn't you, that it was the hockey player?
Didn't you have a story last time we talked about somebody at a grocery store or something because you had the Calvert jersey on?
I did. And I also have a Blue Jackets debit card. Yeah, it was bad when he was still an active player on the team. Yeah, it came up in conversation very frequently. I also met him once because we were partial season ticket holders when he was still on the team. And we went to a meet and greet night. On an old dead cell phone, there's a photograph of me and Matt Calvert with our arm around each other. And yeah, I need to dig that up.
What was his reaction?
He's like, same name. And he cracked up. He was a really friendly, amiable guy.
What did you think of this year's season?
Well, it was pretty much par for the course. I was laughing because there's a lot of people that were really hyped up. They're like, oh man, look at him. And it was like early March. I told my wife, like, a lot of these people must be young or unfamiliar with the Jackets because they got an awful lot of time left to screw this up.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, they didn't let me down.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's perplexing. I don't get it because my thing was Dean Evason was 500 in his win percentage. Why get rid of him? Like, why not let him finish out the season and see what happens? I mean, granted, I know that 500 is not the place you want to be in the NHL. I get it. I understand. But you're trying to build something. I just didn't understand the reasoning for that. And then they brought in Rick Bowness. Rick Bowness was fine. Nothing against him. I do appreciate the fact that he kind of chewed everybody out at the end of the season. I do appreciate that because I don't think that happens in professional sports nowadays, not in 2026. But yeah, I just that's what got me. I was like, what are we doing here, folks? What are we doing?
They seem to straddle a line. It's really frustrating between like mediocrity and aspiring for better, and they don't know how to pull it off.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because they're just perpetually in the middle, either at the bottom of the middle or the top of the middle. Let's say it goes back to polarities and parameters. Like, yeah, the Jackets seem to have a very limited bandwidth of their capability, no matter mm-hmm. who's on the team. They're either mm-hmm. sub-mediocre or two notches above mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
And 25 years of this has become a little bit frustrating.
Hey, I say it to a lot of my hockey friends. I'm like, they continue to keep this up, there's not going to be a franchise in the Columbus area. I mean, because the NHL has stated they want to expand again. And, you know, not that I want to see that happen. I do not want to see that happen because I feel like the team is an important part of the community. We should support it. But you're right. 25 years of mediocrity, how much more can you take?
Well, I think the fundamental problem is the community itself is not opposed to mediocrity. Mm-hmm. I hate to say that, but I mean, I said that to somebody recently. It's like nothing's ever going to change because they're still selling tickets. I mean, mm-hmm. people still show up. They're like the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
People are just yeah. happy to have them and show up regardless. So it's like there's no incentive for management to care.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, wholeheartedly. Like the rumor that I've been told is that the management group, they're happy making their $3 or $4 or $5 million a year at the end of the year. And, you know, that's good enough for them.
Right.
Yeah. So, all right, Matthew, let's talk about some upcoming projects. I know you're very, very busy with the installation and the artwork that you got going out to Chicago. But is there anything that you're working on right now that you'd like to let the folks know about?
Uckboy 2 has inspired me to go down the path of this new medium called cyanotype.
Oh, what is that?
I don't
that?
Know if you're familiar.
No, cyanotype, I'm completely ignorant.
Is what blueprints are made of. The photographic process, you combine two chemicals and you mix them up and you coat a surface with them, be it paper or fabric or any number of things. And you put a negative over that and expose it to UV light. Hmm. And then when you rinse it, you get this incredible blue finish, sort of blue photograph. Well, that's how Uckboy 2 was made. It's a big linen print that's a cyanotype. Oh. It's indigo blue. Well, investing in this process, I have an entire rig of UV lights, like an exposure unit that I made myself. I've got a bunch of clear acetate film that I've taken to drawing on, and I make my own negatives. So I'm working on a cyanotype homemade print project. I'll have some demos, some sample prints, some experiments for sale at Halftone Zine Fest next Saturday down in Lexington.
Okay. All right.
And this is the feeling out phase of that. This is the experimental late night portraits of that. Because this will become a project, but I'm not sure exactly what yet. Now they're just kind of way out drawings where I'm kind of pushing the medium, seeing what I can get away with technically before I think about story or concept or, you know, any mm-hmm. real specific subject matter. So we're in a formal feeling out phase right now.
Okay. All right. Cool. Do you have any other upcoming appearances that you want to talk about besides Chicago? And well, Lexington?
I will be at Space 0.5 or whatever it is that we're having in November. Have you been appraised of that yet?
You know what? I have. I'm going to be 100% honest here. I didn't know who knew, so I was keeping that one close to the vest because I was like, I don't know if that's common knowledge because who told me was like, hey, keep this on the down low. So I'm familiar with Space 0.5 or whatever we're calling it.
Well, I'm really bad at that. Maybe that might be the case. And I'm just spilling beans all over town. I don't know.
We wouldn't be very good super spies, would we?
No. I don't know. I could swear I saw like an Instagram post or something that Bob Corby put out that he's already booked it for November. But by the same token, I have not been offered a chance to sign up yet. I'm just saying I'll be there because I plan to be. Hell, maybe I'm banned. Who knows? That'd be funny.
Well, I think, wasn't it Jack Wallace that instructed you no penises?
Yeah, he is a joy kill, isn't he?
All right, how about website, social media, where folks can follow you and see what all the cool things you got going on, man?
Well, I am Calvert Comics at Instagram, and Slovelave.com is a website that I have some work on. You can read the first 8 pages of a comic I came out with last year called The Metamorphic Dungeon. That's Slovelave.com.
All right. Matthew, man, it's been great having you on the show. I'm sorry it took me so long to get you back on, man. It's just life in general, you know? So much is going on. It's so fast, and sometimes things just happen, you know what I mean?
Oh, 100%. I concur. It's the past 6 years have just sort of flown by like a flock of birds.
All right. With that, then, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Matthew Calvert, talking about all the cool things Calvert Comics has going on. And I want to thank Matthew for taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me today. And maybe you want to chime in with some thoughts or some questions or some comments that you might have about this episode. Well, let me tell you how you could do that. First of all, you can get in touch with me via email. The email address is johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can drop me a line over on the Facebook, Instagram, or Threads account. Just look for @pvdcast. And I'm still on Twitter, just under the handle of @pvdmvp. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about the show and how they can hear it. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that. First of all, pvdcast.com is the online home of yours truly, and probably the best place to get every single new episode. But of course, the show is also available through your favorite podcasting outlet and app. All you have to do is go to the search bar of your favorite outlet or app, put in PVDcast, sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you should find it. And while we're talking about those outlets and apps, don't forget to rate and review. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm. And of course, while you're at it, subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD cast. But there's even a third way that you can catch every single episode, and that is through the Facebook page. On Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, I do a live broadcast of the week's episode. So there's 3 very easy ways to hear the show: pvdcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, the live broadcast through the Facebook page Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.